Tonight I'm going to talk about self-love and self-compassion. And I guess I'll begin by saying these are, especially the word self-love, this is a funny term with a funny history. You know, there are certainly translations of the Bible you can find that condemn self-love. And, you know, moral writers of ancient times, at least certain translations you'll read them in, talk about the problem of self-love or the vice of self-love. And I think what's going on in those places is what they have in mind, self-love is kind of an attitude where I'm saying, you know, I have all the cookies to myself. I'm not sharing any of the cookies with anyone. Like that kind of attitude. And of course, the funny thing is, someone acting in that way is not acting from a place of love at all. That's actually a very wounded kind of behavior, to be that shut down and deliberately ungenerous, you know. And so I think that's what was often mistakenly called. I think it's a misnomer to even label that as self-love. It might be self-prioritization or something like that, but there's very little love in it. In fact, what modern psychology has discovered over and over again is that self-love is exactly that which allows me to love others. It predisposes me to love others. I love others through loving myself. I love myself through loving others. And so that there's this deep synergistic connection between inner compassion and outer compassion. Now, part of the problem is also our Puritan heritage, which really really affects us very deeply. I think it's important not to underestimate how much of an effect the Puritans had on us. And of course, in the Puritan worldview, as long as I was being generous and nice to everyone else, I could be abusive to myself, and that would still be, I'd still be a good person, you know? And this is very different from Buddhism, where there's really this fundamental symmetry between self and other. And if I'm being mean or abusive to myself, that's no better or worse than being mean or abusive to anyone else. Part of the problem also is, of course, and it's very unfortunate, shame is a very good way to control people. It's a very effective way to control people. And so there are lots of parents who, even unwittingly or not realizing they're doing it, use shame as part of their tactic to control people. And it may be that any one of us in this room have had some kind of parenting like that, you know. Certainly I have. I don't know about anyone else. And shame is something that inherently blocks us from being able to relax into self-love. And often the journey toward self-love is a journey of opening up, confronting, and releasing shame. So one thing I'll say about self-love is that it can be very interesting to look at the relationship we have to approval, to getting approval from others, you know? Because, of course, it's very easy for me to love myself in the ways that I'm getting approval from everyone else, you know? And it's actually very interesting to look at what's going on with my self-love in the areas of life, either where it's ambiguous, it's unclear whether I'm getting approval or not, or when I'm confronted with outright rejection of some kind. You know, that you might say that is really, that's where the work of self-love really begins. You know, can I still love myself when there's not this obvious current of external approval still coming in my direction? I have a friend who likes to say that there are three things you need to do to be free in life. You need to fail a class, get fired from a job, and get dumped from a relationship. And he says, if you do all three of those and you realize you're still okay, then you're fine, you know. But all of those are excellent grounds for self-love, for doing the work of self-love. Can I still show up for myself? Can I still love myself and be compassionate to myself, even in those situations where externally the message is that I'm unwanted or unaccepted? I'd say another important current of self-love has to do with self-responsibility. And self-responsibility is a lot about where do I locate agency, you know? And it's often fascinating to look at the language that we use, you know? So-and-so did that and it made me angry, you know? Such and such happened and it made me sad, you know? If I'm using the made me feel something, essentially what I'm saying with my language is that the agency for my emotion is somewhere outside of me. It's with other people, it's with other events, you know? And so, certainly, some of you might be familiar with T group, and certainly I've done some T group, and one of the ideas in T group is this idea of sovereignty, this idea that I am 100% responsible for everything I feel, you know? And so it's, first of all, not blaming anyone else for, you know, you made me feel such and such, but also recognizing that anything I say or do doesn't make anyone else feel anything, you know? And the way that we often, you know, sometimes take on way too much responsibility, you know. And so it's that very delicate balance of, you know, where is agency located and being aware of that. Because if I'm constantly in a victim status, you know, look at everything that happened to me and this made me feel like this and this made me feel like that, then I'm never going to be happy. There's no room to cultivate a genuine experience of self-love if I don't have agency, because love requires agency. A posture of self-responsibility, first of all, it's about taking deep responsibility for what I do, for what I say and what I do, including the unintended consequences of what I do. You know, it's hard enough to take responsibility for the intended consequences, but then there are always those unintended consequences. But it's also about taking full responsibility for what I feel. You know, I have zero control over what anyone else says or does. I have zero control over, you know, world events, political events, you know, economic, whatever, natural disasters. I have no control over any of that. But I have 100% control over what I make of it. I have 100% control over the emotional response I choose to bring to whatever has been presented to me. You know, and a lot of self-love is about occupying that agency and occupying it with tremendous responsibility. Now, love is ultimately healing. In fact, in the greatest analysis, you might say that there's no difference between the energy of love and the energy of healing. And self-love, the journey of self-love is very much a journey of self-healing. And healing is one of those words, it sounds like such a lovely word, you know, until you recognize what's involved in healing. Transformative healing most often involves looking at the things that we most don't want to look at. You know? And so it's, you know, going to the places that have the most pain or the most shame. I would say in my own healing process, I've experienced far more, you know, intense pain in doing the work of healing than just about anything else I've done in life. and I'm very glad to have gone through it, you know. And so it's a funny thing. There's a distinction I learned from a psychologist at one point. Talked about how some people are maximizers, some people are minimizers. And I like this distinction. Some people, when they're triggered, they're a maximizer. There's this explosion of energy. It could be anger, it could be tears, it could be like all this energy comes out, you know. And you know, sometimes a maximizer, they have to learn, all right, I can't throw a temper tantrum here, but it's like this flood of energy inside that comes when they're triggered. And so those people tend to be overwhelmed with emotions. The other type are minimizers. When minimizers are triggered, they do exactly the opposite. Everything closes down. Everything numbs out. Everything freezes over. And so that's much more an attitude of this instinctual just avoidance of pain. Clamp it down. Push it away. Now, neither of those scenarios, avoiding the pain, clamping it down, pushing it away, or being overwhelmed by it, neither one of those leads to healing. You might say that, you might think of it in terms of parenting styles. Now, I know maybe some of you have been parents, some of you haven't, but imagine, say, a two-year-old is having a temper tantrum. Now, a two-year-old, I don't know if you've ever had the joy of experiencing a two-year-old having a temper tantrum, but, of course, they, you know, in a good temper tantrum, the two-year-old gets entirely unhinged and is saying all kinds of things, you know, I hate mommy, I hate daddy, I want to eat ice cream forever, you know, like whatever it is they're saying. And, of course, a wise parent completely discounts the verbal content of whatever the kid is saying, but attends to the child's real needs. That's what a wise parent does. And much in the same way, we have to be a wise parent to the wounded children within us. Because pain always has stories, and a lot of the stories it has are things like, you know, you're not lovable or you're not worthy, you know, whatever it is that the inner critic is saying, that's the story that's coming from pain. And pain, I often like to say pain is in some ways the great internal propagandist. It's like the internal advertising agency. It just produces all these words. There's really virtually no truth content to them, but it all the words are purely designed to sustain the pain, you know, sustain the message that it has. And the motion of healing is not to push that away and not to get sucked into the story of it, but to approach it mindfully and compassionately, simply to sit with tremendous love and acceptance for whatever part of us is hurt. It's something I've often said that I think in many ways the whole path of spiritual growth is about loving the places in us that feel unlovable, accepting the places in us that feel unacceptable, and forgiving the places in us that feel unforgivable. Buddhism says that compassion is our deepest nature, and that the more aligned I am with compassion, the more, in some ways, the more powerful I am, the more I am aligned with my core nature. And to be aligned with compassion, I have to be aligned both with external compassion as well as internal compassion. And so there's tremendous power in self-compassion. And in many ways, it really is the work of self-love is not only the greatest gift that you could give yourself, but it's also the greatest gift you could give everyone else with whom you will interact in life. You know, Because the people who radiate self-love, maybe you've met people like this, they're wonderful to be around. You just want to spend all your time with these people. You just want to soak up their energy because they're so wonderful. Because there's something so profoundly healing from being in the presence of someone like that. You know? And all of us have the possibility of becoming a presence like that. And so that's a powerful vision to hold. At this point, I'll share the quote sheet. I always have a quote sheet. Thank you, sir. The first one from Mr. Rumi, very simple. Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. So true. I like the one here from Thomas Aquinas, well-ordered self-love is right and natural. Even stodgy old Thomas Aquinas is giving the thumbs up to self-love. Thank you. This famous one from Emerson, what lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. Abraham Lincoln, a very wise man, says, I am bound to win. I am not bound to win, but I am bound to be true. I am not bound to succeed, but I am bound to live up to what light I have. We live in a culture that's very fixated on winning and success, you know, and it's often useful to subvert those paradigms, you know. What is actually more important, success or fulfillment, you know? And it's a very naive human assumption that success and fulfillment are the same thing. They're very, very different. George Eliot says, it's never too late to be what you might have been. You know, and that's a poignant one. And just to think of, you know, not necessarily, there may be concrete paths that you can't walk anymore, but as far as qualities that you've always thought, you know, I wanted to have that quality, it's never too late to develop that quality and act it out. William James says, act as if what you do makes a difference. It does. I like that one just for claiming responsibility and agency. Freud says, most people do not want real freedom because real freedom involves responsibility and most people are frightened of responsibility. George Bernard Shaw says, we are made wise not by the recollection of our past, but by the responsibility for our future. Carl Jung says quite bluntly, the most terrifying thing is to accept oneself completely. Eleanor Roosevelt says, freedom makes a huge requirement of every human being. With freedom comes responsibility. For the person who is unwilling to grow up, the person who does not want to carry his own weight, this is a frightening prospect. You know, the story of Peter Pan, it's actually a very powerful myth. The boy who refused to grow up, you know. And there's actually a lot of Peter Pan in this culture. E.E. Cummings says, the hardest challenge is to be yourself in a world where everyone is trying to make you be somebody else. I like that. The great rabbi and theologian Abraham Joshua Heschel says, just to be is a blessing. Just to live is holy. The great actress Lucille Ball says, love yourself first and everything else falls into line. You really have to love yourself to get anything done in this world. Author Charles Bukowski says, can you remember who you were before the world told you who you should be? That one's powerful. Thich Nhat Hanh says, to be beautiful means to be yourself. You don't need to be accepted by others. You need to accept yourself. Actress Eartha Kitt says, "It's about falling in love with yourself and sharing that love with someone who appreciates you, rather than looking for a love to compensate for a self-love deficit." And it is so true also. It's like the best dating advice possible. Cultivate self-love, because self-love is magnetic. You know, if I'm in a place of self-love, then I'll magnetize someone else in a place of self-love. Ram Dass says, "Your problem is you're too busy holding on to your unworthiness." Joan Didion says, "The willingness to accept responsibility for one's own life is the source from which self-respect springs." Hard to say that last part. And it is so true that the more I can rest in agency of my own life, then I feel self-respect. Then I feel much better about myself, certainly much better than if I'm in a victim place. The philosopher king, Vaclav Havel, said, "The salvation of this human world lies nowhere else than in the human heart, in the human power to reflect, in human meekness and human responsibility." I like this one from Rita Mae Brown. "I think the reward for conformity is that everyone likes you except yourself." Les Brown says, "Accept responsibility for your life. Know that it is you who will get you where you want to go, no one else." Shakti Gawain says, "My willingness to be intimate with my own deep feelings creates the space for intimacy with another." Marion Williamson says, "All of us wish we had perfect childhoods with a mother and father who modeled ideal parental attitudes and taught us to internalize the tenets of self-love. Many of us, however, did not." In fact, it's very rare the people who had that kind of ideal parenting. Bell Hooks says, "If we give our children sound self-love, they will be able to deal with whatever life puts before them." Tony Robbins says, "Life is a gift, and it offers the privilege, opportunity, and responsibility to give something back by becoming more." Christian Chenoweth says, "If you can learn to love yourself and all the flaws, you can love other people so much better, and that makes you so happy." And it is true that this whole Buddhist teaching that the person who triggers me is my teacher. In other words, any place where I'm struggling to accept anyone else is a place where I'm struggling to accept myself. And the more I can accept myself, the more I can just have that wide open acceptance. There's this lovely term in Zen, the grandmother heart, you know. Self-love leads to the grandmother heart. Tina Fey says, "Do your thing and don't care if they like it." Tyra Banks says, "Self-love has very little to do with how you feel about your outer self. It's about accepting all of yourself." And Steve Maraboli says, "How would your life be different if you stopped allowing other people to dilute or poison your day with their words and opinions? Let today be the day you stand strong in the truth of your beauty and journey through your day without attachment to the validation of others."